Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
February 24, 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this is indeed the show you were looking for. How do I know it? Because you found it. And that's not an easy thing to do lately. The O'Chelly Effect is live on the 24th day of February 2023. If you're hearing us live, you can call in tonight because it's a Friars Day or Friday. In the general speak out there, right? So, what do we do? My co-host B. Pete and myself are going to do this call-in show tonight. And how do you call into the show? Well, you can reach out to me on Skype if you like. I'm Charles.O'Chelly, and if you send me a message telling me you want to be joined into the show, I can join you into the show. However, another way to join is by calling 319-527-5016. I really should start playing these things in the lottery, I think, these numbers. 319-527-5016, because sometimes I do say them in my sleep. 319-527-5016. That's the number to call. And we're not going to go for a full hour before we're going to take calls tonight, because we got a little less of a plan in our new format than we usually do. And that's fine. So long as me and BP agree on what we're doing, that's what we're doing. So you guys are along for the ride. 319-527-5016. And I'm going to check and see how my co-host is doing. But once again, Charles.O'Chelly on Skype. If you send me a message, even if you're not on my list, you can get on my list right now or anytime, really. And you can call in and join a show live that way, too. Also, the Age of Transitions on Sundays, you can join that show because they do that. Call in, and Uncle the Broadcast does as well. But we do it on Friday nights here. And even when I haven't been able to get to my other live shows, I'm making sure that we're doing Fridays. And if you were paying attention, I also did one last night with Larry Hancock. Why haven't there been as many live shows lately, Chuck? Good reasons. Good causes, I assure you. I'm working on a lot of things, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit in this first hour instead of going to an issue tonight. And B.P. has had his running issue with the Hunter Biden situation. He is going to put it on pause, he tells me, just before we go to air. But it is not due to any sort of pressure of mine or anything. I'm not stopping him. It's his call. It's his time. But he's got his own reasons. First, let me find out how he's doing, and you guys settle back. Like I said, 319-527-5016 if you want to participate. But otherwise, you're going to listen to me and BP chew the fat for the next little while here on a Friday night. How you doing, sir?
Doing good. Doing good. It's been a very hectic week. It's hard to imagine. It's been a week has passed since we last did this. But then I remember last week we ran a little short. And I thought, okay, but it's been hectic. It's been busy. And, so what we're going to do tonight, we're going to put the Hunter Biden laptop on hold right now. The Republicans seem to have come across a snitch, a business partner of Hunter Biden's that, apparently is going to be giving some testimony on some of the business deals that were worked out. So till we get a little more information in here, we're just going to put this thing on hold and see what materializes from the Congress and their investigation into this and see if they can wheedle out any more information, because Hunter Biden missed the deadline to get the paperwork that was requested. So now I guess they're going to go into the subpoena mode and start hitting them with some legal paperwork, and we'll see what comes from that. So tonight we're basically just going to go over some world news headlines, and any one of them that you feel like discussing, we can go more in depth. But you know, I hate to say it, but the world's in a very weird state just looking at the headlines and seeing what's going on everywhere. Well, I'm surprised we could be even, you know, there's no way you could describe the world as functional right now, I think. I think dysfunctional is more fitting term.
Yeah, dysfunctional is the kindest title we can give just about anything on this planet at the moment. I got to tell you.
Really? Because it's... Yeah. It seems like the craziness in one area, you know, transfers to the other, and they get bent out of shape over this, and then something else happens over here, which affects over there, and everybody's just kind of getting in turmoil right now.
Yeah, well, look, and look, let's be forgiving of Hunter Biden. I mean, he's busy suing everybody or whatever, or trying to press people, right, at the moment. So, you know, he missed a deadline. It happens. Am I being facetious? You figure it out. Anyway, not you, VP, you the listener. Figure it out. Am I being facetious or not? I am not holding my breath over any of this, regardless. But anyway, is there other controversy to discuss? Of course there is. You're going to read off some headlines. I have no idea what BP has in store for you guys, but again, I'm along for the ride. So yeah, but the world is a dysfunctional place, brother. What the hell is going on? I keep asking. I'm watching the Rorschach test emerge with everybody. No matter what you put in front of them, no matter what fact, no matter what issue, no matter what thing, you know, people would think, and I've been a guest on a couple of shows recently, and I find it fascinating when you present certain things and you can just press a button and animate somebody. You can get them upset if you want to, and it doesn't take long to figure out how to do it, and all you got to do is throw something at them that they seem to care about, or at least they think that they're supposed to care about, and boom, there it goes. So we're going to bring on some very new and interesting guests onto the Ocelli Effect very soon. That's going to be something. And I've even gotten a couple of interesting ones in mind for Friday. One of them will not be Glenn Viklund, though, who apparently listened to our discussion from last week. I wasn't feeling well, which is why the show got cut short. I was having serious stomach issues, which have now settled down into minor stomach issues, I think, I hope. But I was having digestive problems, let's say. And so here we are. But the Rorschach test, right. It seems to me as though no matter what you do, okay, it's not about the facts. It's not about the actual results. It doesn't matter if it's the train derailment in Ohio, what's happening there, okay, the problems there, if it's a historical academic argument, if it's what's going on in politics, why in the hell is this happening on the world stage, the controversy, as they say, over on the other side of the pond regarding, and I say that because I know we got people listening in the UK right now, I know you guys say controversy. But anyway, you know, should your government or our government be supporting Ukraine? Is this questionable? Well, if you're in certain corridors of the thought process or the method, no, absolutely not. If you're in other corridors, what's the matter with you? Of course you should be. Ugliness is happening there. That's the only thing that I can solidly agree with regarding people's views on it. And to me, war is a crime at all stages. Now, when one chooses to defend themselves, it is different than being an aggressor, okay, in a mass casualty sort of way. But defense is defense. But people that choose to be aggressors, I'm sorry, I got a viewpoint on it. Anyway, I'm not going to go into that so much because there is going to be a ridiculous rally coming up very soon. Rage Against the War Machine. If you were listening to Jack Blood yesterday, I was going to report on that as well. But changed directions when I brought Larry Hancock on, because I really wanted to dedicate my time last night to Larry's view of what is happening regarding Russia. Anyhow, all of that also a controversy at the moment, right? But I have no idea what BP has in mind. Now, I'm sure you saw the train derailment, though, in Ohio, and Ohio's becoming a hotbed of activity. But also, now mass shooting events are starting to overlap. I saw something this week, and again, it's one of those blurs that goes by really fast as you examine some news. And I've been very busy with a lot of things this week that didn't allow me to hang around on the news, although Mrs. O got me watching some of that Murdaugh trial. Murdaugh, I'm hearing it pronounced different ways. Matter of fact, the guy's name is Alex, or at least that's his middle name. And I keep hearing everybody call him Alec. I find that odd.
That's just Southern.
Yeah. Well, there's all
That's
kinds of...
That's just a Southern take on it.
All kinds of Southern stuff in play there. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, the third generation of a guy named Buster, and, you know, a lot of stuff that's going on there is uniquely Southern. But, you know, it's also like a family of gingers, you know, the whole thing. Anyway, whatever.
Small town Southern, which is a kind of a unique, subset of Southern. Small town Southern is totally different than just Southern.
See, because you have the right accent, that's why I wanted you to talk about it actually a little bit at some point tonight, because I gotta say, it sounds almost like I'm being prejudiced. If I comment on some of the things I'm seeing, you know, in this trial, in this demonstration, I mean, it's a very old and worn out, you know, what we call a cliche, you know, the local power that be, right? The local power that is, the local guy that controls the community.
Oh,
I see that
everywhere. The Murdoch murder case, that is the, epitome is not a strong enough word. This case is everything you would stereotypically think of small backwoods South Carolina, well, low country. I mean, that describes it better than anything. You got like a five county area down there along the coast that's just half of a swamp. The rest of it is semi-livable, I guess, but it's these small towns throughout five counties. Nothing very big, but this family rode herd on that entire area for the past 100 years.
Yeah, by being,
I mean, it's amazing.
By being some sort of solicitor general or something and constantly handing it
down.
Yeah,
down there.
Yeah.
Yeah, down there, here you elect prosecutors, like City of L.A. has a prosecutor. L.A. County has a prosecutor.
Sure.
Down there, you have a judicial district, which is made up of like five counties. Mm-hmm. So their prosecutor's called a solicitor, and the Murdoch family has held that position for the past 100 years. There were three generations in a row, and Alec Murdoch, his name is Alexander, Alex, but they call him Alec. That's just a common thing in the South. You'll spell a name one way, but you'll call the guy Tiny. Right. Indicative of the area.
Well, and meanwhile, that's his middle name too. That's his middle name, right? Legally.
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't matter.
So, you know, these guys are all named after each other. His son Buster is named after his actual great grandfather, who was the first Buster, and then his grandfather also went by Buster. I mean, this is
right.
This is small town, and I would say deep South stereotypes. You pick a stereotype, and it's there.
Well, let me put it
from
to you this
the
way:
language from
I mean, while I was doing other work, B. Pete, okay, to characterize this to anybody who is not familiar with Southern culture at all, I listened for an hour as the prosecutor grilled the guy on the stand, Murdaugh himself, right? And I keep saying Murdaugh, and I keep hearing Murdoch, but I don't see a K, all right? And anyway, put that aside. I had to listen for about an hour about, you know, the hound they got in the kennel. Okay, named Bubba, who they had to take the chicken out of his mouth, right? And I'm listening to them going over the actual facts and sequence of events regarding this, all right, for an hour. That should give you some indicator of what we're dealing with here. And meanwhile, this is one of the most rich and influential families in the area that apparently went broke enough that the guy started embezzling millions and millions of dollars from clients and the law firm itself.
Well, it was... And that was one thing that, you know, the family was had no clue as to what was going on to the finances. Alec Murdoch was the first one in line for the solicitorship, and he decided he wanted to stay in private practice. Now, he was a temporary part-time solicitor. When cases, you know, just got overloaded, he might do some work. But for the most part, his family's law practice was – on personal injury. They were the biggest personal injury lawyers in South Carolina, and that's how they made their money.
Right.
And sometime, this was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, he had a housekeeper that passed away.
Right.
Fell down the steps at his house. He tells the family, hey, sue me, let my insurance pay off, and you'll be set. You know, it's sad that your mom is, and the lady worked for them for you know, a good, I think, 18 years or something.
Oh, yeah, a lot,
raised
a lot
both
of years.
The kids.
One of the boys, but, absolutely.
So, you know,
one of the boys, yeah, absolutely.
She felt like, you know, like she was one of the family.
Yeah, like a second mom to one of the boys for sure. And look, I want to state for the record that it's alleged that the family didn't know anything about it. Now, you and I, maybe not privy here, we're starting to learn a lot, though, and those charges are still pending against this guy for all sorts of theft and things he was doing. So there may indeed be.
Oh, he's got like 50, I think he's got 50 counts on the fraud from misappropriating clients' monies.
Right.
In addition to the two murder charges. Yeah. But he started out, you know, he told the family, here, you know, y'all are gonna sue me, we'll get the settlement, you'll be set, you know, it won't replace your mom, but it'll help you through the rest of your life. Well, what right. he did was, as soon as this process started, he told the sons, the surviving sons of his housekeeper, you know, look, we need to get you a lawyer. So he calls up a buddy of his. Mm-hmm. He appoints that, you know, he talks him into being the representative for the family. So they sue the insurance company, and it was an accidental death. Apparently the dog or something tripped her while she was standing at the top of the steps in front of the house, fell down. She happened to hit her head, concussion. She lives a couple days and then eventually passes away.
Right.
So they do the settlement. Well, when the money comes in, because this lawyer was representing the sons, it was basically, look, you know, this is kind of an open and shut thing. We're just waiting for them to get it all decided, and I'll let you know when everything's settled. Mm-hmm. Well, when the insurance company settled and cut the check, they sent it to this guy. He turns right around and gives it back to Alec Murdaugh. Mm-hmm. And this was like something like $4.5 million. So he redirects the check. The family gets a check for like $25,000. To start off with, you know, like, hey, here's first payment. You know, we're still processing this while Alex has pocketed the $4.5 million. Mm-hmm. He did this on several different cases where he would redirect monies back to him or claim that his billing charges equaled the amount of the check. So basically kept it
right.
And his client would get nothing. And this went on for a long time, but it hadn't come to the surface yet. What brought it to the surface were two things. 4 years ago, his son had his dad's boat. He's out with his girlfriend and two other couples from high school. Mm-hmm. They go up the river. They go to town. They go to a couple places. They're drinking. The son ends up drunk. They're on the way back. He hits the piling support for a bridge over the river or the canal.
Yeah, like head on at full speed kind of thing. Like at high, well, not full speed, high speed. He hits this thing hard.
Yeah, he was booking pretty hard. It tore the boat up pretty bad. Well, it threw one of the girls out of the boat. She ended up drowning. They found her body like 3 to 5 days later.
Right. Well, according to the coroner, what happened is she sustained a pretty severe head trauma. And then, and meanwhile, Mrs. O has kind of dragged me into this case. She's totally fascinated by it. And I was listening to it, you know, just as I'm doing other stuff. Over the past couple of days, and I did a little, of course, it's me, so I'm gonna do research on it too, right? So I gotta say that, you know, first off, when you're talking about this housekeeper, there are a lot of suspicions now that maybe even the death wasn't quite as advertised, because this idea that she tripped over some dogs and fell down some steps, it's a possibility, but then again, it gets very weird and twisted. And why? Because the trial that we're actually engaged in now, because all these charges of fraud and everything are pending, BP, right? So that's not even being handled because we got a priority here. Now, that whole thing with the girl in the boat, that becomes yet another lawsuit, another legal issue. You know, the son is now going to be charged.
But that's what brought about some of the – they're thinking that When this accident happened, some of the surviving friends that were out that night on the boat they were all injured.
Right.
All went to the hospital, and some of them had some surgeries in that.
Yeah, like
so
for instance,
the
boyfriend.
The families filed civil suits.
Yeah, for instance,
yeah,
the
they
boyfriend.
They filed civil suits against Alex Murdaugh.
Right. The boyfriend.
Knowing full well that when it comes to civil, he's going to have to provide financials.
Well, he's the good.
And the minute he starts providing financials, the gig is up. They're going to see this amount of money that has gone through his accounts.
Right.
And they're going to want to know, where is it?
Right. And here's the thing. All right. So the girl that you're talking about that they found like 3 to 5 days later, whatever it was, a week later almost, right? That girl who hit her head and then drowned after hitting her head, according to the coroner, was there with her boyfriend. They were both ejected from the boat and they both hit, you know, something, and sustained severe head injuries. He didn't drown.
He didn't, from what I understand, the boyfriend was not thrown out of the boat. They were laying in the floor of the boat when it hit.
Well,
he had a hold of her.
Yeah. But,
and when they hit so hard, she flew out of the boat. He was still in the boat wondering he said, look, I had her in her arms next second. She's gone.
She
disappeared.
Okay. But I picked up on the Netflix documentary where the guy himself says, okay, in the documentary, cause they interviewed him, that he was also ejected, and the other reports there that were gathered seemed to suggest that he had sustained a head injury as well and went into the water also. But he did not drown, okay? He ends up coming up, and as soon as he comes to, after being knocked out, he's freaking out looking for his girlfriend. He's the one on the tape, because they show you a body cam and stuff in this documentary on Netflix.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Netflix, HBO, a whole bunch of different outlets have picked this up as, you know, hey, murder mystery and everything else, because of the part we haven't even gotten to yet.
Okay. Was that the one titled Low Country?
I don't remember if that's...
Because that's the one... I don't have Netflix, but it was on... Maybe that's the HBO version of it. They did one called Low Country.
I think that's the HBO version, because this one is in three parts... And I only have access to Netflix because somebody shares a password with me. But the thing is, I had to catch this because I'm listening to this trial. And once they put Murdaugh on the stand, I mean, you know, look, there's a whole thing going on.
And that's
to
be honest, that's the strangest thing that has come out of this is the fact that he wanted to testify.
Right. And I'll
tell
you.
The ruling court is you never get up unless you're trying to mitigate a situation,
right,
and they got you dead to rights, nobody ever testifies in a murder trial.
Well, he's
blown everybody's mind by telling them, yes, I want to testify.
Yeah.
And he's been up there, what, 13 hours, 14 hours so far?
Well, a couple of days. Here's the thing about that, though. A lot of people think that it's a standard rule. Don't take the stand. That is generally the conventional wisdom, but in some cases you do want to take the stand. Because they have painted you as such a scumbag that you need to try and gain some sympathy with the jury. And maybe if you go up there and you cry and you carry on a little bit and you tell your story your way, you might be able to gain a bit of sympathy. This does happen in murder trials, especially.
Well, not only that, in this case, if you paid attention to the way he's testified, he's walked the prosecutor back on several things by just getting up there and going on and giving an answer and then wanting to explain the answer and spending another 2 or 3 minutes, you know, dancing in circles. He's basically taken the bite out of the prosecutor on a lot of this stuff.
Well, see,
because he's admitted, he said, look, I robbed from everybody.
Well, you know,
he's admitted that. The only thing he's denied doing is shooting his son and his wife.
Well, right. See, we didn't even get there yet. Now, he goes through this whole thing, and he does elaborate, which to me is totally bizarre, because any process in a criminal court I've ever witnessed, okay, and I've witnessed many, not all that I'm involved in. I've witnessed things as a third party many times. And I got to tell you, usually if a prosecutor is getting questions from you, they purposely shorten your answers. This prosecutor is letting him run on and explain stuff and put things in context and tell a little story. I've never seen anything like this from
a
defendant.
Well, it's funny. He's tried to cut him short. But Alec Murdaugh is a good enough attorney that he's, from the stand, he's basically backing the prosecutor down.
Well, I got to
say,
we're
here for a murder trial and you want to talk about financial stuff.
But
I've admitted I took the money.
Okay, that's what you see.
Let's get back to the topic at hand.
All right, but BP, that's what you see in the highlights.
Funny.
But BP, that's what you're seeing in the highlights. I'm telling you, as I've sat here and listened to this, the prosecutor's not trying that hard all the time to stop him. The majority of the time when I'm listening to this.
Oh, I know. I've been recording it with the DVR and catching it at night, watching the whole thing. I'm not just watching highlights.
Okay,
I'm
good.
Watching the whole damn.
Well, good.
It's hilarious.
Well, keep going, because I'm telling you what I hear the majority of the time is he's like, look, answer my question and then go ahead and tell your story. I mean, he's letting that run. That, I mean, a lot. How many times have you heard that already? Right, where he's like, "Look, right,
every question. Every, just go ahead and answer my question
okay.
before you go on.
Answer my question, but then you can tell the story. But he's letting him tell these long stories, you know. And he's
exactly.
letting him.
That's the part that it freaks me. It's hilarious.
But
I've never seen anybody in a murder trial testify this way.
Not this way. No,
ever.
And even your own lawyers will coach you and say, look, okay, so I've been as a juvenile involved where, you know, if you're going to wind up being questioned, give them as little to work with as possible, shorten your answers. Your own lawyers will tell you this normally. I don't see this as a skill that Murdaugh is showing here. I think this is a lack of skill on the prosecutor's part, because he should be cutting this stuff off. Why? Because he is humanizing certain things here. He is constantly referring to his son, his now deceased son, as Pawpaw instead of Paul. Okay, you know
he's using that nickname. He's, you know, he's showing him just how close he was with his son.
Well, but that's the thing. He's
Murdaugh knows exactly what he's doing, and he's playing the prosecutor like a fiddle.
Oh yeah, but not because he's forcing the issue or making it happen. I see it as the prosecutor is just giving him all kinds of leeway, and I mean, even his own lawyer, Murdaugh's lawyer, is trying to cut things off. And objecting and saying, look, you're now dancing into Fifth Amendment territory here. You know, you're going to have him self-incriminate. This is not the issue of the trial here. Blah, blah, blah. And the judge is going right along with the prosecutor. The prosecutor does have run of the table here, it looks like. And he's not stopping this guy. And I'm even seeing legal analysts.
I think he's hoping he'll trip up. I think he's putting his money on the bet that if he lets him talk enough, he'll hang himself.
Well, don't go there just yet.
Because
wait, no. That's an oversimplification. Don't go there just yet, BP, because I've got an idea to introduce to you here. Because I've listened to these legal analysts also throw up their hands, because they're more stunned than you and I are. They're going, I've been a prosecutor, I've been a defense, whatever, whoever they are, and I'm looking at them on, you know, there's a YouTube feed for this, right? I don't know if it's being broadcast on TV, but there's a YouTube feed which doesn't have commercials, pretty much. And that's it. You get this, I forget what it's called, but I'll see if I can put the link, because I guarantee it's going to go on. I'll put the link in the show, and you can watch the thing later right there on a YouTube channel. But also you can watch the analysis that's coming through. It's like court TV, but it's not court TV. It's on YouTube. And I forget what it's called, Crime and Justice or something. Whatever.
Law and Crime. So I think, I know the one you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about. Okay. So their analysts,
let me see if I can find it.
They always bring on a lawyer, right, to go, okay, so tell us what you just heard, what you just saw, what mistakes were just made. These guys are dumbfounded going, I don't know. This is really weird. What we're watching. I can't believe this guy's being allowed to go on and on. He's telling a story about the chicken, the dog, the golf cart. I mean, he's just elaborating like crazy. And I don't think the prosecutor is looking to have him trip up. I mean, he's trying to trip him up on occasion. Occasionally he amps up and he seems to really get harsh with him, right? Come on, just admit, you're a liar, you're a scumbag, you know, pretty much. And you're gonna tell us that you didn't honestly, you just tell us you shot her, go ahead. He's doing that. Murdaugh is not flinching at that stuff. He's ready for it. I mean, the guy's even trying to taunt him with, alright, so how many times did you rehearse that answer, Alec? You know, I mean, like, really. And what I find even funnier, by the way, is the guy who was his former law partner. Who's just sitting there like, well, you realize your trusted friend was lying to you, right? And the guy's like, yeah, well, the whole world knows now. You know, I mean, like, just matter of fact, yeah, I know. Well, I trusted him. I'm stupid. I mean, pretty much that's what he's saying. The law partner, you've seen that guy too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I don't think that the prosecutor has in mind that he's going to trip him up. Occasionally, he turns up the volume. He twists the, twists the vice a bit and tries to squeeze him. He's not squeezing him successfully. Not at all. He keeps trying. And this guy will even turn around and assert himself. Well, why don't you let me finish then? I was trying to answer your question. He's literally going back at him comfortably, you know, saying, well, now, you or I, when we're in, I'm not saying that I would be intimidated by any freaking suit standing in a courtroom directly, but it's an intimidating situation, especially if you're on trial for your life, right? Now, I didn't even check to see if the charge includes death penalty or what. This case right now we're looking at is not even all about this embezzlement of multiple millions of dollars. It's not even about that. Those charges are still pending. This is a murder trial.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a while before they get around to that.
And it isn't about the death of the housekeeper, as Pete already spoiled for you if you were listening. It's about the death of his son, one of his sons, not Buster, but the other son, Paul, okay, who was apparently an out-of-control drunk, okay, who was using his older brother's ID to buy booze and everything else, which, by the way, the liquor store got sued also, because the lady didn't, really check. She just kind of beeped his freaking ID through and gave it to him. They showed footage of it in the Netflix documentary. Anyhow, and they show pictures of them drunk and everything else. And the girl, look, here's the last known photograph of, what was her name? Mallory, I think. Last known photograph of Mallory alive. She didn't know that less than an hour from now, her happy life would be over. You know, the whole dramatization. All true stuff, but a dramatization and a particular representation. And they bring on the girl's family and, the father who's like, flat out says, I'm surprised they didn't come to me. When Murdaugh's family was, some of his family was murdered because, they might have thought that an eye for an eye might have been a real thing here in the South.
They checked him out. They definitely checked him out.
They did, but he wasn't the primary suspect.
Paul had been getting some threats after it was like 2 years. He hadn't been to trial yet. That's the thing about the boat accident is he was never actually arrested, and that pissed a lot of people off.
No,
he was charged.
He was charged.
But they never even got handcuffs on him. In fact, when he went before his arraignment before the judge, when it was over with, they were going to take him in back. They were going to put cuffs on him, take him in back. And Alex Murdaugh pulled him off to the side, said, no, that's not how we're doing this.
Well, as per usual.
And of course, he made his bail and was out.
Right. And as per usual, money and privilege buys you things like, well, I guess I'll surrender to the police when. Right. I'll come in voluntarily. Right. Yeah. Let's arrange with your lawyer so that you'll surrender at this time or you'll come in for questioning and perhaps we'll detain you. That's the polite way when you, have a privilege, when you have the money. Now, if you're just, you or me, BP, guess what happens? They come pull us over, kick in our door or whatever. And guess what, scumbag? You're coming with us. And you're going to be held until you see a judge. And when you see that judge, you might be lucky to get bail. You can't afford it? Too bad. Find a bondsman. Put up a house. Don't got a house? Ask a family member to put up a house, right? This is what you and I would face, okay, in a double murder. Especially with other suspicious circumstances in play. We have the resources to, be a flight risk, et cetera. They might have hit us with a bigger bail than 50 grand, which is all they gave to this kid for what? A possible, reckless homicide, right? Because he's got a death while operating a boat, intoxicated, and I think 2 counts of serious injury Paul was facing, while intoxicated and operating a boat. Now, these are fairly severe charges. These are the kind of things where, you will do time, or you could do serious time. People were hurt, and people died, okay? So, this is what happens. But he's being handled with kid gloves, 50 grand on the bail, if I remember right. Like you said, no, we're going to take him on the side. We're not going to make him do a perp walk. He's not showing up in court in stripes, right? He's showing up with at least a polo shirt on and, meant to have his shoulders slumped so he can look sad and all. And, oh, look at the poor kid's in trouble. Well, let him go home so he can sort it out, right? Whatever. But that's not the way the majority of people would be treated in this circumstance, okay?
No, and you see that in every southern small town. You know, the son of the biggest attorney in town gets pulled for a DUI, and next thing you know, they're sending him home in a cab if dad can't come down there and get him.
Well, don't leave the north
after this happened.
Yeah, don't just pin it on the south.
Well, the first thing that Paul did during the wreck, though, was call his grandfather.
Well, of course.
His grandfather was the one that had the pull.
But don't just lay it on the South, PP. Let's be fair. This happens up north all the time. It might be for a different reason.
Well, it does, but they don't do it with the finesse that it's done down here. I mean, here it's a tradition that goes back, you know, back when this place was still 13 colonies.
All right. Well, we'll agree.
It's a tradition. It's an ingrained tradition that has its own little. It has its own little aspects that just totally pisses off the average guy.
Well, I assure,
because it's done so blatantly and in the open.
But
other places they try to hush this stuff up. Down here, it's done right out in the open. It's like, that's the way it is, folks.
Well, I assure you, BP, look, we're going to have to agree to disagree here. It has a different flavor. Okay, just like Southern fried chicken is definitely Southern fried chicken, but they still fry chicken up north, okay? You know what I'm saying? It's still the same meal. It might be served on a different plate.
Cheap imitation.
Well, just like the pizza sucks down here, okay? It's still pizza, I guess, but, you know, it's not. All right, so it's a different thing, but it's still a pizza, okay, sadly.
I can't believe, you know, I really have to find, I'm going to call bullshit on that. You have to have had at least one decent pizza in the South, because I have decent pizza all the time. I don't know where you're going, but I mean, there's some places I can tell you about, but you've never come across a decent pizza since you've moved down here?
Yeah.
Ever?
Okay. In all fairness, in the state of Georgia, two places, one of them, was disappeared due to COVID. But the other one, it does exist, and it's pretty good. It's not great, but it is recognizable and comparable. It could be a bad pizza in New Jersey, okay? It could be a bad pizza in New Jersey, and it's all right. All right. I like, it's edible, and the fact that it's overpriced, I don't mind so much, because it's like, well, at least it's not, you know, a frozen disc. It ain't Little Caesars. It ain't Papa John's.
So the best you can get would be bad up there. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think you're being fair to it.
I am being absolutely fair. It is just recognizable. Okay. So, and it's, the place is in Macon, Georgia, a free plug. And by the way, I approached them to advertise. Fatty's Pizza is the name of this place in Macon, Georgia, the place that I used to go to, which we just discovered before COVID, you know, shook everything up. And they did shut down. Look, they didn't shut down most of Georgia, but in the area near the university, guess what? They went with the, you know, with the program, okay? So even though the whole state of Georgia...
Well, you know, I find it amazing, though, with as many as you damn Yankees that have moved down here, you think there'd be more decent pizza places.
Well, the problem is this. First of all, not that many Italians down south, I notice. First of all. So there is a handicap there. The second handicap is the water's different down here, BP. I mean, it just is. So if your water's different, your dough's going to turn out different. It's just...
No.
Yes.
You cannot tell me that the fact that you haven't been able to get a decent pizza is because the water's different.
Straight face, absolutely, I will swear by it. You get a gourmet chef to talk to you about the different quality of water, okay, and how it affects.
I know water's different, but it's pizza.
But it affects the dough, man. Look, it does, just like bread is different here. Overall, bread is different here because of the different quality of water.
Is our water not contaminated enough or what? I mean, what's the difference? It's all municipal chlorinated water. What's the difference between Jersey water and Georgia water?
There are mineral qualities that vary by region. I'm not kidding. Okay, you can laugh all you want. I swear to you, if you talk to a gourmet chef or a baker, they will tell you that the quality of the water, and I know this factually because somebody attempted, and this is one of the businesses that lost their footing here when COVID hit again, one of these places attempted to get water treatment put in place to simulate the water from up north. I'm not kidding. The guy's laughing at me. Got you hear this, folks? He's cracking up. I'm telling him a real story. Okay, don't believe me.
What did that entail? Trucking? I mean, were they like trucking water from Jersey down, or was he having it bottled, or was he buying it in bulk?
No, he wasn't buying it in bulk. That might have been, look, it might have been smarter, but it wouldn't have been economical. So the thing is, he actually tried to put in water filtration that would cause, look, you run it through certain, you run water over certain rocks, you keep it at a certain temperature, you make sure to treat it a slightly different way, and you will get a different quality of water, even though it's all, you know, clean water and everything. Although I gotta tell you,
since we're talking about Jersey, I mean, it's the polluted water from Jersey that makes the pizza better.
No, it's not.
Is that what we're getting to?
No, no, no. It's not the polluted water. The thing that they can't kill, no matter how many chemicals they put in there, is the quality of the water table, which comes from the ground in Jersey, okay? There is...
But the minute you run it through, processing and chlorinate it and do their, what, double osmosis and throw a couple salts back in it just to give it some mineral content, it's not Jersey water anymore.
Yeah, but that's my point.
It's been processed.
But even with the process... There are characteristics that can be given to water based on regional circumstances, what they're exposed to, things like this. Okay, the mineral content of the ground, if you're drawing it from the ground, is something that no matter how you poison it. And by the way, not every water process is universal. Like, it's not the same water process. Place to place, okay?
I know you have different water authorities and different municipalities that are treating it different ways, but
yeah.
Maybe we just solved the problems with your digestive problems. I need to, I guess, take a road trip, head up to Jersey, and get you some bottled water from up there.
That'd
take care of everything.
Might not be a bad idea, but, you know, even the water in New York...
And you can make decent pizza.
Well, see, now the water in New York is different, too, and it's different than Jersey because of their very old system. They have, you know, less PVC crap in there, and they used to have a lot of copper in the piping, right? And
what town? Where was the location of the absolute best pizza you ever had? Where was it located?
I will tell you that I would have to give it to a certain. I know New Jersey's a small state, but I'd have to tell you that. It is between there's two counties, Monmouth County and the county just above it, and not the whole county.
You're there.
Yeah, you're not hearing me?
Hello?
You're not hearing me. Okay.
I lost you.
Okay, I am here still. Pete can't hear me. You guys can. But anyway, I will type a message to him. Yes, you are still here. Oh, hopefully he didn't hang up. You are still here. Okay. All right. Anyway.
Now you're back.
Okay. Now you hear me again. I just typed you a message, but I was hearing you. You were going, hello, and I was hearing you just fine. You were coming across to me.
I couldn't hear anything at all. I lost all sound.
Okay.
The last thing I heard was you were narrowing it down.
Yeah. Okay. I narrowed it down. I started to tell you Monmouth County.
And just
north of Monmouth County.
We need to get somebody up north, somebody that listens here, somebody that's going to hear this on a podcast. Mm. We need to go to Monmouth County and get a gallon jug and fill it up with water, seal it, and send it to Chuck.
I'll
pay the shipping.
I will gladly take it. But here's the other qualifier. I can narrow it down even more. Monmouth County and the county just above it, just north of it, which, I think it might be Hudson County. Take a look. Whichever one is on the shore, okay? Because here's the deal. It is literally from the half of Monmouth County that is on the Atlantic Ocean and the county just north of it that is also on the ocean. So it's that sliver right there. That's where the very best pizza ever came from as far as I'm concerned. So... I assume it's water quality. That is a major factor. The other factor here, though, is that, quite frankly, there are products that are not available in southern markets, even for restaurants. You know that, right, BP?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there are certain products that they don't use here. I'll give you an example. Do you ever see pork roll sold down here?
No, I know what you're talking about. I have seen it just a couple places, but they're usually places like Nahunta Center, which takes pork and processes it into every imaginable configuration.
So despite the fact that there are hog farms galore down here, this is a pork product that you almost never see. You won't see it in your grocery store. It doesn't exist in your general grocery stores here, right? Something called pork roll.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's commonplace in Jersey, right? Commonplace in New York. You ask anybody about what breakfast sandwich do you want? Almost anybody I ever knew that grew up there would tell you some combination of a hard roll. Okay. Again, the bread. All right. From an Italian bakery, with or without poppy seeds, depending on your preference. And you put some pork roll, egg, and cheese, or maybe pork roll and cheese. I preferred it without the egg because, you know, after a while, all these jacked up eggs, unless it's a completely organic egg, I can't eat it because that bothers my stomach as well. But when I was a kid, the absolute best, it wasn't an Egg McMuffin. Egg McMuffins are okay, but no. The best breakfast sandwich, you go to a local place, pork roll, egg, and cheese. Go to a deli, pork roll, egg, and cheese. Everybody I knew up there ate pork roll. I mean, I knew Jews that ate pork roll up there. You know what I'm saying? It was that universal. All right.
Okay. Are you talking about, Middlesex County, New Brunswick?
It's just north of Monmouth. If you look at the map, it's just north of Monmouth.
The only one that touches Monmouth is Middlesex, because you have to go west because of the Bay Area right there. So
above that
is Union. So it'd be Monmouth and Middlesex.
Right. There you go. But right there where the...
All right. That's where we need water. Okay, listeners. We need water. One of those two counties. Let me know when you get it. You can email me at bp1969@yahoo.com, and I'll ship it to Chuck.
Beautiful. And I'll tell you what,
if
it's within 10 miles of the Atlantic Ocean, you've hit the bullseye. It's just that simple. Cause I can think of like four or five places that were like godlike pizza, and that's where it is. Okay. Like this is what a pizza's supposed to be. Absolutely. And I know people that swear by New York, and New York pizza is great. It really is. But I'm telling you, the best ever as far as my system, my palate, my everything is concerned. That's where the best bread comes from. I can still name you the Italian bakeries. No problem. JJ Cassone is one. Okay. There's a fictional, bakery there.
Cassone's bakery has gotten pretty big because, I had an uncle down here that worked at a local bakery for years and years, and then he finally got a franchise for Pepperidge Farm. Mm-hmm. But when he started carrying specialty rolls and things like that, everything that he got was shipped down here fresh, J.J. Cassone.
Yeah,
was his main distributor.
Right, and they would do this process where they would kind of sort of freeze it, but not quite freeze it, to preserve it a little longer to send it down here. Yeah, I know about that.
Oh, they'd have it down here overnight. They wouldn't even have to freeze it. They had trucks coming down. When he got his delivery at 6 o'clock in the morning, at his warehouse area, it had been put on the truck still warm and straight down here. That's how fresh it was.
Yeah, well, the problem with doing that, though, is that if you do that and steam gets trapped in there, then you have moisture and you end up with wet bread. So what they started to do was, along the way, and I just happen to know this because I knew the guys who worked on those trucks you're talking about, is that they did have like an icebox truck. And they didn't crank it up to normal refrigeration. They just gave it a tinge of refrigeration, and it would sort of freeze and frost over that steam. That steam would get captured and frosted over a little bit. And on its way down, then the thaw goes through, the moisture escapes naturally, and it remains fresh, perfectly fresh, like it just came out of the oven when it shows up. That's what they did along the way. Don't know if I'm revealing a trade secret here or not, but that is the way it was done. And they did it in box trucks that had refrigeration units on them. But they didn't, you know, crank the full refrigeration unit on. You know what I'm saying? They also sent Danishes down here. Same way. They would send fresh-made Danishes and, you know, cake slices, bagels, all that stuff. Matter of fact, there is a Macon bagel place, which has made, like, national news and, like, you know, restaurateur magazines and all that, you know, big time, because they literally brought the process and a style of making bagels to Georgia. Okay, now these people were from Florida, but if you track them back, they came from the Northeast, they went to Florida, and they came up to Georgia to start their business. And it's something like...
Yeah, they're halfbacks.
Yeah. So that's what they did. But they brought the process and some of the elements, and they don't, you know, share everything. But if I knew somebody who worked for the health department, I could probably get in on what all is going on there. But their style of making bagels, I haven't tried them yet. But from what I understand, people that have tried them from up north have gone, well, this is just like a bagel up north. This is like the bread up north. So it is different. I swear to you it's different. And it is, to my mind, the water. But indeed, I bet you there are different elements that come in. Maybe a different flour, different yeast. I don't know. Some stuff is not available, because I've asked some of these places that make pizza and stuff, like, you know, where do you get your tomatoes from and things? They're not sourcing the same way that they would up north. They can't. It's not available to them. I mean, I know nowadays it might be, but they don't all know necessarily where to get everything. Maybe you've heard that Jersey tomatoes are especially good. Maybe you've heard that in the past. I don't know. What can I tell you? But
no, I've not heard. I've not heard anything in particular to Jersey maters.
Okay. Well,
because everybody down here grows them.
Well, go ahead and do a little research on it. You'll see that some people will swear to the idea in the Northeast that Jersey tomatoes are the best. Guys from New York used to come to New Jersey to get tomatoes. You know, like by the truckload.
Well, of course. Where the hell are you going to find tomatoes fresh in New York? Greengrocers up there can't even get it in fresh.
There's plenty of farms in New York State. You know,
upstate, it's quicker to go to Jersey.
Well, it's quicker, but also quality's better. I'm just telling you, there's something to a Jersey tomato. Even if you ever watch The Sopranos. Oh, no, I'm serious. You ever watch The Sopranos? They make jokes about the gangsters coming from New York. Eh, you know why they're over here? Because the Jersey tomatoes are in season. You know, like, that's why they're traveling to Jersey. Otherwise, they don't want to come here.
No, that's why they're going, because there's nowhere in New York to grow any tomatoes. It's all upstate. It's quicker. That's all it is. Well, it's not because of the popularity and because they're such great tomatoes. It's convenience. Yeah, they're the closest tomatoes.
But you're also forgetting that New York has international access through the ports constant to everywhere. You know what I'm saying?
I don't want a tomato that's been shipped from a greenhouse in the middle of Israel that takes, you know, 3 weeks to get here when I can just pop over to Jersey and buy as many as I want.
Well, you'd be better off growing your own as opposed to buying the ones that probably came from Mexico in your supermarket right now.
But nah, I gotta grow them up. I gotta grow them on the roof, and the, you know, everybody walks their dogs up there and they just get whizzed on left and right. It's hard to grow tomatoes in the city.
Okay, fair enough. But I'm saying that, you know, anyway, just check it out. Do a Jersey little research.
Jersey built a tomato legend on the fact of convenience and not exquisite tomatoes.
All right, I'll let you say what you want. If ever by chance you and I get a chance to sample some of it together, tell you what, if somebody's willing to send that water, why don't you send BP a couple of tomatoes? Okay, seriously, show them. I'm serious. Show them what it is, please. Not the GMO crap.
We'll just have to take an elongated road trip. We go to Dallas via New Jersey.
Well, I'm hoping actually to make a road trip with somebody to Jersey soon. You know. Anyway, we do have other callers. We've now killed a whole hour, by the way. So I'm just for the record.
Yeah, well, I need to get some coffee, too. Why don't we take a break, and then we'll come back with callers?
You know what? That sounds like a good idea. I've already got one on the regular call line, and I do believe I have one waiting in the wings on Skype. So how about we get that together during the break? Let BP go get his coffee and the Ocelli Effect Friday night. I didn't expect to be talking Jersey tomatoes, but BP asked a question. We've already been on the Murdaugh trial a little bit, and we might get into that some more. Maybe Mrs. O will call in. Because she is absolutely well more read in on this than me. But I got to tell you, now she's got me hooked into it. So there's something to be seen there, as BP also discussed. And who knows what's on your mind? We're going to leave it a little more open tonight, not sticking to a particular subject necessarily. So call in 319-527-5016. 319-527-5016 if you're hearing us live on the 24th day of February 2023, or reach out to me, Charles.Ocelli on Skype. Ask me to, and I will call you into the show. The Ocelli Effect continues after this.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're tuned into the Ocelli Effect.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now. Go there now. Go there now.
Mad Prophet of the Airways.
I am here every Thursday, 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock Pacific time, right here on the Ocelli Radio Network, which is really one of the most, I think it's the gem in the landscape of media today. Please donate, buy a coffee and some smokes for my man, my producer, and the owner of this network, Chuck, today by donating at Ocelli.com. Keep it alive. Keep it alive.
Ocelli.com.
Revelation through conversation.
You're listening to the Ocelli.com radio network.
Revelation through conversation.
For as little as $50 a month, you can buy an ad for your business, podcast, book, or any message you want heard on one or more of the Ocelli.com shows. To find out more, contact ads at Ocelli.com. That's ads at Ocelli.com. Be heard with us. Revelation through conversation. Ocelli.com.
Every time I put it on my face, I'm able to breathe just a little bit deeper.
What are people saying about MyTrueEssence.net?
I'm going to tell you something serious, man. I just want to tell you listeners, I put some of that Modifilin from Christy, and she made me up some of this emu oil mixed with some other stuff. I don't know what's in it, but I like the way it smelled. And I started putting it on, rubbing it on my foot, rubbing it on my knee, and like the second day, I just noticed it. I'm walking around, I'm like, damn, my knee is loose.
But I can tell you that oil you gave me helped me with my carpal and my shoulder problem. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be working.
My ankles sort of really be pesky and bother me. And I'm telling you, the pain just went away. Essential oils rule!
And when I put that on, it's like my skin came alive.
MyTrueEssence.net.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times, and reveals never before published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
The views expressed by callers, co-hosts, or anyone else who happens to get on the air at Ocelli.com do not necessarily reflect the views of Ocelli.com or Chuck Ocelli, and we are not responsible for any stupidity which might ensue. Thank you.
OChili.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Second hour and second segment of the Ocelli Effect on Ocelli.com, live on the 24th day of February 2023. So if you're trying to call in, that's the only time that you can. I notice sometimes when we have replays, people try to call in. We are just, 13 minutes past 9 p.m. Eastern time as we speak on the 24th day of February 2023. That's the only time, unless you got a time machine, that you can actually call into the show and participate or join us via Skype. There you go. I'm trying to eat. I'm trying to do a bunch of things. And as per usual, I can't get them done in an efficient manner. So here we are with the Friday Mess, brought to you by anybody who wants to sponsor it, by the by. Anyhow, maybe I'll get into those updates and everything else next week when I go live, because we're going to run right out of time. I've got a caller on Skype already. I've got two waiting in the wings on the phone lines. And maybe you, 319-527-5016. 319-527-5016. That's the number you can dial to join in, listen in, and participate. Also, you can reach out to me, Charles.Ocelli, on Skype. Send me a message, and I shall add you into the call if you ask to be called. But I call you into the show. Keep that in mind. You don't call me, I'm going to bat the call away if you do. And block you on Skype if you keep doing it, because it destroys my my time here. It screws with me while I'm trying to broadcast. You send me a message, I call you into the show. Okay, anyway, or 319-527-5016. As per usual, my co-host B-Pete is with me. Enough out of my motor mouth. B-Pete, we have number 6 on the Skype line with us and a couple of callers waiting in the wings. So I guess we should first go to number 6 and then get in short order the other callers, because we're going to run right out of time tonight if we don't. So what do you think? Number 6, we bring him in next or what?
Yeah, hook him up. Hook him up.
Excellent.
Let's see if he's got a topic he wants to tackle.
6, New Prisoner, number 6. Of course, the New Prisoners podcast. Our friend Chris Graves participates over there as well. Doesn't just do the Get Mad thing over here and the Digging Chris Graves thing over there and everywhere, but another part of the Chris Graves universe, the New Prisoners. And number 6, the main speaker, the guy who monologues over there, along with John Henry, Lisa, and, you know, I always forget how to pronounce her last name, but Lisa the lawyer.
Belanger.
Belanger. Mm-hmm. Lisa the lawyer, I always say. Chris Graves and this guy, number 6, and John Henry, all together over at the New Prisoners. And he'll tell you about that before we're all done tonight, I'm sure. How you doing, number 6?
Oh, doing great, Chuck. Glad to be here on another Friday night call-in show. Thank you for the intro there, my friend. One of the things I wanted to bring up, I have eaten pizza in many places, but I can guarantee you I have drank many more beers, and the water source, whenever it comes to beer, is extremely influential in the flavor. Like, when you're talking about pH balance, when you're talking about, like, the smoothness of the water, like something that, like, if something has a great amount of limestone that the water passes over, that can greatly affect the beer. So your whole entire theory about the pizza being different because of the water, I'd say it's plausible. I'm not saying it's, you know, it's 100%. You know, well, BP might have a couple good explanations as to things, some Occam's razors there, but
yeah, sure.
I do think the environment has a lot to do with it. Yeah.
Well, and another thing about this is, look, when you're talking about beer, you're obviously going to drink some of the water, and somebody might say, well, I'm not drinking the water if I'm eating pizza. Fine, but it literally changes the texture, not just the flavor of the bread. Not just the
Well, you're talking about
the dough.
Yeah, and it's the moisture. Yeah. And as with women, the moisture matters.
Well, it changes the texture, the makeup, how strong it is, how it holds together, how it breaks apart when you eat it, or, you know, like, you ever get a muffin, right? You know, and some places you make a muffin, you touch the thing and it crumbles into a million pieces. Other places it's very spongy. Right? It's because they did something a little different. And in some cases, it's water. So I'm thinking, you know, same kind of thing. Because I've always wondered why it is that bagels don't taste the same. Right? You go about as far as Ohio, and then the bagels don't taste the same no more if you're going west. That's it.
Different grain sources, yeah. Possibly too.
But with a pizza, look, there's a bunch of things to consider, and I think the tomatoes are something to consider where they're sourced. The water that goes into the dough, for sure. Then your access to cheese and oils and stuff like that. Now you might be able to get olive oil anywhere, and that's something that probably doesn't account for much. Except, you know, look, you can spend more money or less on it, and get a better quality or lower quality olive oil, right? But when it comes to things like if you're locally sourcing tomatoes or locally sourcing water, you're going to work with what you got to work with. And there's certain things, again, they're only available in certain markets. So I'm just assuming that's what the problem is. But I guess I could be wrong. Anyhow, it's not a big issue. Obviously,
unfortunately, well, it is a big issue because it's a life enhancing issue in that this you have spent all this time trying to find a pizza like back home that you've missed out on being able to enjoy the pizzas that you have because you put this pizza from Jersey on a pedestal. And then so no pizza you're ever going to eat is going to be as good. It's like boutique beers. I mean, we've got breweries popping up in this state, every other town. So, you know, we've got our special beer and we've got our special beer and you're paying a lot of money for a lot of high-priced stuff. Enjoy life. There's too many things to go out there and enjoy to fuss over trying to find the ultimate pizza.
Sit around
and discuss that, you know, this beer seems to have a little more of an earthy tone than that beer there. Just get a beer and go do what you got to do.
All right.
You're going to die worrying about not getting a good pizza.
But I'm not going to die worrying
about it. Don't
waste
your life.
I'm just saying that if you want a pizza, it sucks. That's all. And as far as the pedestal, there is a way that they do this on the tables, by the way, in some places, where it does go up on a pedestal, actually. They put the, you know, literal circular pan on a pedestal so that it makes more table space. It's raised up. That does happen. I know what you meant, though. Anyway, look. I'm not trying to say that, and it's not just my memory or romanticizing it either, because guess what? Mrs. O's mom brought pizza, bought a couple of pizzas, right, and literally put them in Ziploc bags, broke them up, put them in Ziploc bags, and brought them down when she came to visit, all right? And I was like, oh, thank God. That's right. It tasted like this. It actually was like, wow. And she didn't even get it from the best place. It was just like run-of-the-mill stuff up there. I was like, oh my God, this is what I miss.
It's all a matter of perspective. Pizza is like sex. Even bad pizza is better than no pizza. It just depends on how much pizza you want and what your ideal pizza is. Just don't burn your life up, you know, waiting like the search for the Holy Grail. Don't waste your life expecting a trip across to New York Pizza in the middle of Georgia.
Look, it's not
like... But enjoy what you can get.
All right. I'm not trying to waste my life. I'm just saying, and by the way, I also disagree with you about the sex thing. Sorry. No, there is a big, huge difference. I understand take what you can get, and sure, I'll eat a sandwich instead of a gourmet meal. Fine. Okay, and certainly if you're lonely enough, then you're lonely, okay? I get it, but doesn't mean that it's really good or something that promotes happiness. It just kind of, you know, fulfills a need or, you know, fills a gap, does the job, fine, okay. But if you want to enjoy something, there's a difference. And sex and pizza, same deal. Anyway, we got callers waiting. I don't want to cut number six off any more than I already did. And I didn't want to take all this time on the pizza, but I can't help it.
I couldn't help myself, Chuck. I also wanted to throw out an idea for a southern pizza. A breakfast pizza with Scrapple, scrambled eggs, and hollandaise sauce as the sauce.
Dude, Speedway's way ahead of you. They got breakfast pizzas that taste just like that.
Great. And you can ruin these things 80 different ways. I had a guy from Ohio arguing with me about putting ranch dressing on it too. Whatever. You can ruin it any way you want. It's your food. I believe in people's freedom of choice. All right,
then settle this question that I got from my girlfriend's Swedish or Swiss daughter.
Your plate, your problem.
Does pineapple belong on a pizza?
100%.
All right.
Especially with
Chuck,
pork. Any pork product.
No, wait a minute. Chuck.
No, it does not.
Does pineapple belong? Okay.
No, it does not.
There we go.
Historically, the whole reason why it's popularized and you have it all over this country is because Italian immigrants, their wives would send them to work in the cities, all right, with something that didn't go bad all day. So they sent it with, they could wrap it in a piece of cloth and they could get away with it. It was originated by an artisan who wanted to represent the newly adopted Italian flag colors in Italy, but it was popularized here in America because the Italian guys building your cities, okay, were sharing their lunches with the other guys they were working with. And they went, oh, this is pretty good. But it was mainly because it was sustainable for the day. It didn't go bad for the day. And it was a simple bit of peasant food, actually. And that's all it was. And it has become this thing which is very much Americanized and is called pizza constantly. But honestly, it was something created by a baker, an artisan. He just needed green, red, and white to represent the newly adopted Italian flag colors. That was it. So there you go. That's the real history of it. And it was popularized here and started, to the best of my knowledge, in New York. People argue, oh, Chicago, whatever. Best of my knowledge, it was something that was popularized in New York, and it was an organic thing that emerged and has become absolutely part of American culture. That's the way that is. Anyway, we got callers on the line, so I want to get to Jimmy James before he passes out, or he's probably yelling at his phone at me right now, and he's going to tell me how great pizza is in Michigan, I bet. Jimmy James, how you doing, man? Sorry it took so long, but every time I said something, it takes 10 more minutes to get back around to something else. Sorry. What's up?
More on the dough. I got comments in the dough and the Murdos.
The dough and the Murdos. Maybe that'll be the title for tonight's episode. The dough and the Murdos. The,
I love it.
The murder dough and the Murdos. There we go. There we go. I don't
no,
know.
You're wrong. Chuck, you assumed too much. I agree with you completely on the dough and the coitus.
Okay. BP, would you like to respond?
Well, wait, I want to explain that first.
Not really.
Hold on, BP. I got to explain my dough scenario here.
Go ahead.
It's just a point of fact. The Northeast has a sourdough quality due to the Atlantic Ocean, especially it's saltier in the Northeast, and it's something about that. And I also want to get back to that on the best bread, because it's in a completely different place, and also for an interesting reason. Go ahead, BP.
Oh, no, I have no retort. I mean, you guys...
Okay.
You're the ones that, you know, pray to the pizza gods and the beer gods. So,
you know,
a dosey, have at it.
A dosey dough back to
I'm
you,
happy.
Jimmy James. Go ahead.
I'm happy with the pizza I get, not the pizza I aspire to achieve.
There you go.
Well, it's one thing doesn't necessarily have to do with the other. Now, the best bread I've ever had in my life is, go ahead, take a wild guess, BP. If you get the right town or country, I'll give you $1 billion. I'll give you $1 billion. Jelani Kosovo.
Who?
Exactly.
Who?
Jelani Kosovo. It's just a town in the Kosovo, and when we liberated this place, they've been doing everything the same since the Middle Ages. And guess what? They were using the same stone ovens from the Middle Ages. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, that was the best bread I have ever had in my entire life.
Well, B. Pete knows me well enough to know that I have this irrational and absolutely racist streak toward the French people. But generally, pretty good bread also. Just saying, French bread is pretty good.
They make pretty good vodka too, which surprised me. So, you know, I used to be one of those that really didn't think much of the French either until I started drinking their vodka. They do a good job with vodka.
Okay. Also, all the best beer comes from pretty much from the monks in France. Germany is long since
I'd have to argue that one.
Well, the origination of the styles.
Not Belgium?
The Germans don't know a thing about making beer. And I hate that Dusseldorf or whatever stupid beer there. It's like their Budweiser.
That's because, well, see, that's just it. You're drinking commercial German beers, not the local breweries. Kusher Alt was around the Mainz area. You could only get it, I don't know, within probably 30, 40 miles of the Mainz area. And that was some of the best dark beer I've ever had in my life. But I think to import it, it cost you for a case of 20 liter bottles, it's almost $100. So it's out of the price. But man, this stuff was so fresh, you cap a bottle of it.
I'll just try to get to the Murdos. How you say it, BP?
Murdochs.
The ginger corn people.
From up north, you say Murdaw. If you're from the low country, it's Murdoch.
That's kind of like I got scolded for saying Alton instead of Alton down south here, right? For a guy's name, Alton, Alton.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead. Alton. Sorry, Jimmy James. Go ahead.
Well, I do listen to that dude. I just listened to his testimony for like a half hour, and oh, he's slick. He's slick. But
he is slick.
And there's a they got no choice but to let the man. They're fool enough. Look, when they're when they're being cross examined, it's not like Matlock. Yes or no? No, no. If you can ask a yes or no question, but then it's your constitutional right to then explain it the way you wish to. And that's all I had.
Well, you can guide that. I've seen a prosecutor guide it so that you're pretty much put in a position of this is a yes or no question, you need to address it. And they keep pulling you back to that. Yes or no, yes or no. And they make you give short answers. And they'll, Your Honor, instruct the witness to answer the question that is asked. And this guy's not
well,
doing
now,
that
what,
very
what
much.
What he should do, actually, what I think he should do, what I would do is I'd say, well, this guy's a very skilled litigator, Your Honor. I want permission to treat him like a hostile witness. And then he would have to give more simplistic answers.
Well, he didn't ask for that, but he did try to, state, look, you're a well-skilled liar and a lawyer. You know, he's making that point now and then if you listen to the whole thing. Like I said, he turns up the intensity on him every now and then, but he's just letting him meander instead of he has every right to turn around and cut him off. Okay, it's been answered. All righty, move on. He can do that, too, and try to, push him that way, and he's not really pushing him the way I see it. But, We do have another caller, though. I don't know if Six wants to comment on the Murdoch. I think they say it Murdoch down here, but I'm reading it Murdoch. Again,
I would say Murdaw, just the way it looks to me, but I just recently found out about this case. Like, I have a friend that, posted something about it that, about nobody should believe this person and talking about the person that you were talking about before that took the stand. Mm-hmm. And I literally know nothing else besides that. I would love to get everyone's takes on like what their predictions on this is, or I just fill me in.
Well, I would say go to that YouTube channel. Which BP, did you find the name of that YouTube channel?
You said I put the link in the room.
Oh, you put the link in the room. Sorry, I'm not looking at the chat room, guys. But anyway, by the way, also welcome to the chatters or whoever's listening. Glad to have you along, but I'm not looking at the chat right now. Look, that's going on, and that moves me on to the next caller, actually. So if we're going to leave it there, you don't have much to say on it. You want a prediction. Maybe we'll get into that in a few minutes because I want to bring in the other caller and remind people that you could be the next caller after this. 319-527-5016. We are talking, beer, pizza, and the Murdoch or Murdaw, murderer trial. No, I'm not stuttering or slurring. So that is happening, and that's a South Carolina thing that's going on. And we didn't even finish really our initial explanation of it, but that's okay. Seems like people have different levels of familiarity. And I have a feeling that this caller definitely has a level of familiarity with the case. And you're live with us. How you doing?
Hey, everybody. It's Mrs. O.
Hey, Mrs. O.
Always good to hear from the other room. Hun, so as promised, I knew it would come up, and you are responsible directly for turning my attention to this trial because I didn't want to pay attention to it. I'm looking at it, throwing up my hands, going, okay, people with a privilege, people with money, and they're abusing their power, yawn. Multiple documentaries made about it, sure. The ID runs them constantly, don't they? Murder in the South, murder and murder and murder and murder and Forensic Files and all day long, let's get into the voyeuristic view. But this is a bizarre case. The first disturbing thing, here we go, I'm not going to be politically correct again. But I mean, just the fact that we're dealing with, let's just be frank, a bunch of ginger looking guys who are involved here. I don't know why, but that makes it even weirder to me. And you know, you got your definitely southern aspects of this, but this whole thing is weird. What do you have to say about the Murdaugh trial so far, and the whole controversy in general? Because again, you've been on this now, I don't know, for a couple of months, I think, and really been watching the trial, and you've now pulled me in. So to speak, you pulled me back in to watching a trial. So go ahead, hon.
Well, I think I had brought this case up before it even went to trial on the radio.
Yes.
When we were talking about the housekeeper. But I think, did you watch it yet today, DP, your taping?
I watched just a little bit of it. I was busy before we came on the air, so I'll watch the rest of it after we get offline.
Super entertaining. Okay. Go ahead, hon.
I might ruin a part of it for you. But you know how he was saying that he hadn't gone down to the kennels and he took a nap. Well, he lied.
Yeah.
He did go down there.
Well, they had him on his son. Well, I was going to say, you know, he would have gotten away with that lie had he not, he didn't know that his son had taken a TikTok video of the dog that was in the kennel. Chuck had mentioned earlier about the other dog, Bubba, that had gotten the chicken. Right. His son had taken a TikTok because he was taking care of a friend of his hunting dog. Had a problem with the tail, so they were keeping him in the kennel to keep him away from other dogs. And that's why Paul was there, was to check on his friend's dog, because the vet was going to – his friend wanted him to take a video. Apparently his tail was hurt in some way. So Paul takes a quick TikTok. Well, in the background, you can hear his mother and you can hear his father. So that's what busted him on that. He was only going to get away with that lie. I mean, you never know which kids are videotaping. Just keep that in mind if you're planning a double murder.
Yeah, well, you know? And the thing is, the reason why I brought it up, you got to watch that your kids aren't taping if you're going to kill your spouse especially. Thing is that this was like an hour's worth of testimony today on this dog with the chicken, and when did you go down and how long were you there in the golf cart. I mean, an hour's worth of time was taken up with this. No.
Yeah, because his original statement was, I didn't go to the kennels until I came back from checking on my mom.
Right.
But yet there he was before the murders. And now how do you explain this? So, yeah, they got him six ways from Sunday on that one.
I think he went down there to see if it happened yet. And it didn't happen yet.
Well, and I was wondering about that, too. Yeah, it's almost like he had to make up the excuse to go to his mom, to go check on his mom, because his dad was in the hospital. He didn't go check on his dad. He went to go check on his mom. And he went to go check on his mom knowing full well that she was in late-stage Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's patients, you keep them on a very strict schedule, or it throws them off completely. Right. And you can lose a lot of advantage in their condition if you throw them off. So they were always wondering, and that's, I agree with you. I think he went there just to give enough time for it to happen. I think he was there when it happened, though, to be honest. I don't think he was right there and saw it happen, but I think he was there at the kennels.
Yeah, there's a lot of room and a lot of material to work with for speculation here, which, by the way, for the record, I told you I was going to be on Pirate Radio later. I literally just got a message which says, "Avast," with an exclamation point, like, "Avast, matey." "Avast, we go live in under 90 minutes," just saying. Okay. So.
Reply back, "Ard, matey."
Actually, I'm going to say,
maybe. There was a guy used to walk around dressed like a pirate. What about that? Florida.
Yep. Sounds like you're working at Long John Silver's.
Well, I think they might have a Long John Silver's.
He was just a guy. We used to call him the pirate. He used to dress like a pirate.
All right, so I'm replying to him, aye, Captain. Anyway, so there you go. I'll be the guest on Pirate Radio at about 11 p.m. Eastern, just so everybody knows. Hopefully,
You get one of those little cardboard pirate hats?
No, we're not doing all that. Hey, look, I might put the bandana on the head, though. You know, I do have a skull and crossbone bandana right here. I could put it on my head. I do that sometimes, keep the hair out of my face anyway. So there you go. Mrs. O, I'm not lying, am I? I got one right here.
No.
Okay. Anyways, sorry, I derailed the Murdoch discussion. But no, this is an interesting thing, and go ahead and catch up on it on that channel. You did get the name of the channel though, B. Pete, right?
It's a Long Crime channel. You can go to YouTube. If you're not in the chat room, just go to YouTube and go to Long Crime. Put that in the search bar. That'll take you to their channel, and they've got all of their sections of continuing. They're following it live, but then they're saving segments, so you can watch the trial from beginning to end through their videos.
There you go. So I'm going to try and get the live. I'm being asked for the live. I just looked at the chat room, being asked for the live link there. I'll put it in there. But again, you guys can participate in this discussion currently about the Murdoch trial. Over there, Alex, that's his middle name, you know, the ginger dude, his son Buster, and all the testimony, regarding the murder of one of his other sons and his wife, which definitely occurred. Somebody shot them, pretty severely and killed them both, but, he's on trial for it right now. And all that stuff we were talking about with the financial, well, those charges are still pending. Pretty interesting. So anyway, BP, go ahead and take the lead.
I have an etymological question. Ginger, that's an expression that you hear in the UK when they're talking about redheads. Over here, we call them redheads. You know, like when someone was treated like a redheaded stepchild.
Yeah.
How did ginger start being accepted here? Because I still find it funny when an American is talking and they say ginger instead of redhead.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, just like Jimmy James said, very much on South Park, I think. Yeah. So the cartoon did it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'm curious.
I think so. I mean, it might have emerged before that and they picked up on it, but as far as I'm concerned, that's where I heard it, like, really drilled. Because they did a whole episode about, you know, Cartman wants the ginger separated from everybody, and then they play a joke on him and turn him into a ginger, and then he starts the ginger supremacy movement and wants to wipe out everybody who isn't a ginger. So, that's what popularized it to my mind. Number six, do you have any idea etymologically about the ginger situation and how it became popular in the U.S.?
I certainly think amongst people of my generation, South Park, for certain.
Fair enough.
And then people of the Gen Z generation is the ginger disappearing that Disney is doing. So every major ginger role that's ever been played pretty much in Disney lore has now been replaced by a person of a different color.
Seriously?
Yeah. Little Mermaid being one of the more prominent ones.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah, it's happening.
Freaking communists. What is their point? I mean, what is the purpose of replacing, Ariel, I think, was the redhead. Wasn't she the Littlest Mermaid or the Little Mermaid?
Well, I mean, they know
Ariel. So what color is her hair now?
I don't know. Way more than half of the people that survive any zombie apocalypse have to be gay. So, I mean, it's just a thing now, right? I mean,
no, look, Ariel is black in the new Disney production.
And are you saying that?
Really?
Zombies, Chuck?
I'm sorry? What was
because
that?
You can build
they
melanin
retained
underneath
that?
The ocean.
The zombies, they still got to do that?
I don't know about the zombies, but the survivors, you know, the people that are fighting the zombies, it just seems to me that there's an inordinate amount of non-heterosexual people that seem to survive
well,
the zombie
that's
apocalypse.
Everywhere. That's like just average TV commercials. You can't see a regular unmixed couple on a TV commercial anymore. Everybody is in a mixed race couple.
Well,
or
all
group,
mixed race
or family.
Too. Yeah.
It's
well,
like James Chappelle says, I'm black, my wife's Filipino, somehow our kids are Puerto Rican. Yeah. Go figure.
There you go.
I have an example where they're, by being, just changing characters for the fun of it as they're doing. Okay, take the little orphan Annie. She's a famous ginger, right? Well, there was a reason for every stupid thing in that stupid comic that originated in that stupid Chicago newspaper. It was a political message. Big Daddy Warbucks, mm-hmm. who always had his strange Indian helper around, is a commentary on Great Britain and whatnot. And by putting that black comedian and girl in it, they totally... They had no idea what the thing was even about.
Okay.
That's deconstructionism.
Well, you know what? You know what's interesting about that? Remember the movie they made in the 19, I think it's the 70s, late 70s? Annie, and it starred, my God, the bald guy. What, was it Yul Brynner, maybe? I don't remember which bald guy it was, but it was, you know, the classic movie that everybody looks to from, I think it's the 70s. You know where part of that was filmed, right? The mansion scenes and stuff was in New Jersey at the part of the land that Woodrow Wilson donated to Monmouth College in New Jersey. That's a true story.
Albert Finney was
Albert Finney. Okay.
Oliver Warbucks.
Okay. There you go. But I was trying to remember which famous actor it was. I knew it was one of the guys.
That's what happened. That's how we lose history. For instance, when they cancel, there's a reason, like you've heard the show Amos and Andy. Well, that thing was a radio show and was on 50 years before it got canceled by the AACP or whatever. But there's so much in our culture today that is directly related to that show, and people don't even realize it. For instance, the whole thing is one of the, you know, it's a comedy situation. They all belong to a fraternal order. Mm-hmm. And they had a joke fraternal order, and they were always calling each other's brother. This is how black people came to calling each other brothers. And there's other examples. I could just go through the term holy mackerel. The kingfish came up with that. And on it goes.
All righty. Well, fair enough. I'm unaware of this stuff, some of it. But wasn't aware of the brother thing, you know.
Oh, yeah, because the kingfish always used to end his thing. After all, aren't we all brothers under the sky and the big whatever? He was the kingfish because the organization that he's, instead of like the Elks Club, it was, had a fish name or something. It's actually a pretty funny show.
Okay, fair enough. I was never a big fan or focused on that one. I always find it funny though that, if you listen very carefully, and Paul Mooney made this point to, Chris Rock and the way he speaks and the way he acts, it is almost directly reminiscent of the guy that used to be on the Jack Benny show that played Rochester. It's almost exactly the same cadence and speech patterns and everything. You know the guy who's on there? Oh, okay, Mr.
Oh,
Rochester.
Rochester. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a great character, that guy, because he was always, of course, Jack Benny was always really the butt of the joke. Mm-hmm. It's funny.
No, I know, but it's just funny to me that, like, if you listen to Chris Rock and you listen to that character, it's almost like Chris Rock's doing an impression of that character when he does his comedy. It's like the same thing.
Well, here's another example. So when they were shooting that show, Amos and Andy, one of the main characters was the so-called lawyer. He was a funny guy. But he was played by a very famous comedian named Johnny Lee. And there was always these two kids always hanging around Johnny. One would end up being Red Fox. And guess what? The Kingfish is one of his main phrases was, "You big dummy." Gee, did that come up again under Samson's son? And so there's a lot of Kingfish in that character that Red played, Fred Sanford.
Right, right. And as John Barber tells it, there's a lot of, well, Red Fox in Fred Sanford, too, literally, because it's like, you know, that was his name, I guess, and things like that. So I find the whole thing interesting how these things evolve, you know.
Yeah,
and got the name Red for his red hair.
No, well, maybe so, but the point is...
Well, not exactly. That's something more to do with McCarthyism at the time, but...
There you go.
Okay.
All right, I was going to try and let that pass, but anyway... There it is.
Disdainful History by Jimmy James.
But the Sanford name is something directly connected to Red Fox and his actual family name, if I remember right,
well,
from John Barber's story.
His dad's name was Fred Sanford.
Right. Well, there you go. So, anyway, interesting tidbits of media history with Jimmy James. There you go. So, B. Pete, where shall we go from here? We have... about 15 good minutes left, and then we're pretty much done for this Friday night. It flew by quick, didn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, when you're just shooting the crap, you have a tendency to pass time. We should end a little bit early, though, you know, just give you time to get ready for the other show. So, you know, we got, what, 5-6 minutes?
Oh, I love this. Six gave us a thing here. What is the origin of the term ginger? Did you see that?
Yes, and real quickly it says, of hair having the color of ginger, of a person sandy-haired, of a cock, not that kind of cock, Graves, having red plumage. All right? But it says right underneath that, R4B vocab, 1830. Ginger of a pale red color, particularly applied to hair. So I guess origination right around 1825. It's been around for
the male.
Yeah, but in America, no one gave a crap about it. So South Park said ginger in an episode. It's the first time I ever heard it. Now everyone says it.
See, I remember hearing about it a little bit before that, but it was generally from people of English and Irish heritage had used that term. You know, so it was kind of in use. Yeah,
my ex girlfriend was. English, and she used it in talking with all of her friends. I mean, it was just common expression with them.
Yeah.
And which, that's why it struck me to hear people over here use it as much as they have here. So I guess we can chalk that one up to South Park. They have performed a service.
Well, they popularized what existed elsewhere in the English-speaking world, right? So there you go. Anyhow, everybody goes dead silent. Anything else we should add here, BB? On that note.
Well, I don't know. We've covered it, you know, such a range of stuff from murder to and mayhem to pizzas to water to soils to you name it. And now we're ending up on gingers. I guess we've made the full circle here tonight.
Pretty much.
Can I ask it?
Go ahead.
BP, did you hear at the end of the trial today they were talking about the one juror that's wearing a blanket over her head, and they're trying to figure out why neither side has questioned the judge as to why she's doing that, and they're saying that somebody had speculated that she didn't want to hear Murdaugh's testimony. And if that's the case, then she needs to be replaced.
She needs to be removed if she's not taking all the evidence into account.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's funny. Right. These jurors can't take notes.
I'll bet they're saying that she needs to do that to not have a panic attack. Why not just give this guy a mistrial? That's what they're obviously going to do.
Well, I don't know. See, to me, you know what commentary I have for this as a constant now after watching it the past couple of days is that, you know, I would be really, really worried if I were the prosecutor here that I'm exhausting this jury. Because this to me is exhausting. If I had to sit there, and also, they're not allowed to take notes, B. Pete was just bringing up. They don't have notebooks. I've heard this, you know, sort of done before where some judges think it's a bad idea for people to have notebooks because they'll write something down and then they won't think beyond what they wrote down. And then I've heard others say that, look, this is a good way for them to not remember things if they can't take any notes of their own. And apparently in this case, they're not allowed to have notebooks, which I find odd. This whole thing is very odd, is all I'm saying.
Well, most cases like this, you're allowed to take notes, and it's, you know, it's a good way to write down an exhibit number, something you want to see later once you get back into the jury room. And what they do is you're able to take notes, and then at the end of the session, the jury leaves, they leave their notebooks in the seat with their writing instruments, and the bailiff collects them to be given to them later. But, you know, they're kept under lock and key. It's not like the jurors keep them with them at all times. So,
right.
But it surprised me when I heard that the jurors down there were not allowed to take notes. That really surprised me.
I find it strange, but I have heard of it before. Again, because for some reason or other, you know, different. And look, a judge has a right to do certain things in their courtroom, you know, and set rules like that. I don't know. The whole thing is just It's a common thing there. Okay, I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah,
but
it's up to the judge. Yeah, the judge can either he makes the call for the jury. He can say you can take notes or don't take notes. It's up to the individual judge.
Well, like I said, I've seen it done both ways, but generally speaking, I always thought that more often than not, it was acceptable for jurors to take notes. I thought it was encouraged, you know. But here we go. You never know. And the
especially on a trial this convoluted, you know, most murder trials are not three-day affairs. Somebody's not pleading guilty to something. They make an appearance and go. You know, an actual murder trial, most of them takes minimum a couple weeks to go through the prosecution's case. So,
fair
enough. Yeah, a lot of times, you know, they're allowed to take notes just because of the amount of information that they're having to deal with.
Fair enough. At the tail end of the show here, we do have another caller. So I'm going to bring them on air, and then we'll probably have to, after we let them speak their piece, go around the table here and get everybody's final thoughts, B. Pete, and that'll be that. So, new caller.
Yep.
You're on the air.
Yeah, can I get the two medium, two chopping deal?
You need to call Jersey if you want real pizza, man. I'm just telling you.
You won't wait? You won't wait with that?
I'm sorry. Domino's is just cheap. I'm sorry.
Yeah, cheap, right. A lot of things are
I got
cheap.
Nothing else to add. You guys are awesome. That's all.
Okay. If you,
I love talking about pizza, and I love hearing about it, and I love eating it.
If you say so, sir. Interesting show today, by the way. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you want to tell people about it? I haven't put it out yet. I haven't put it out yet, but Get Mad with Chris Graves today featured who, Chris?
Mr. Billy Ray Valentine of the Infinite Fringe. And, he has a different perspective, kind of like a certain Mr. Rocelli that I know. And, it was really refreshing. And, I'm really proud of it, actually.
Well, yeah. I got some common ground with Billy Ray. I don't know if I would say that he's similar to me, but I've got some common ground with him for sure.
You like to call LBS where it needs to be called out. That's what I meant. It's pretty big.
I try to, and I try to do it without being so confrontational. But, hey, look, he's got his style, too. And It is what it is. It's interesting. He's in that Arterburn.
You both are pretty universe. Cool, is all I'm saying. You're both pretty cool, that's all.
Yeah, no, cool stuff. And I like the idea that he's got this cooperative FM thing that he's going to do, too. I'm not fully sure about the whole concept, but sounds like a good one. Sounds like a winner.
Well, he doesn't like a lot of the alternative media, basically, and so he wants to do something about it. So, well, kind of like Ochilli.com, you know?
That's why it exists. Otherwise, I would have just, you know,
exactly.
Let other people keep producing me. So there you go. That's why I do what I do. But anyway, yeah, no, that was an interesting show. Of course, you had a couple interesting shows this week already. Three times a week, Get Mad runs at 6 p.m. Eastern here on Ochilli.com. And you had the Occult Priestess. And who did you start the week out with?
Mr. Jason Barker of Knights of the Storm and the Foxhole, and he was telling us about how to survive EMP attacks, and his heart's in the right place. So, yeah, it was a pretty cool week.
There you have it. Interesting week for you, for sure. And we're trying to keep it interesting here. Of course, Jack Blood had Steve Cameron on yesterday. And, you know.
Yeah, I heard about that.
That was what that was. And there you go. So anyway, Chris, anything you want to add in?
Oh, can I just say one thing and then I'll hang up?
Certainly.
Yes, I hope everyone can tune in tomorrow night at 7 so they can hear Mr. Six there talk to the guys at Knights of the Storm, Angry Tiger. And our thoughts are with Angry Tiger right now. He's going through some difficult stuff. And Mr. Jason Barker again, and Lisa Belanger, and John Henry, and I think maybe I'll crawl out from under my rock and make an appearance possibly, and you guys have a good weekend.
All right. Chris Graves, again, you know, check out all the stuff that is available in the Chris Graves media universe. His link tree is often linked to his shows now, so definitely catch him while you can. And Digging Chris Graves, Get Mad with Chris Graves, The New Prisoners. I mean, the guy's everywhere. Get it all. It is interesting. And also a shout-out to Erroneous Method, another recent guest on Get Mad, who also my best wishes are with you. And hope that you get your circumstances under control quickly, too. So we'll leave it at that. And I'm going to put Mr. Graves on hold. Pete, what order should we deal with everybody in, or do we have something else we need to tend to before we close it out?
No, we can go in reverse order, or we can go in the order that they joined us. So,
all right. Well,
it's up to you.
Let's do reverse order, because we often go in proper order. So let's start with, Mrs. O then, right? All right, so Mrs. O, a closing thought here on this Friday night. Hello? Dear, hello? All right, well, let's see, did she leave? Ah, she may have hung up. Sorry, I guess we'll have to now go over to Jimmy James, right?
Yep. He's next.
Okay.
Jimmy.
I'm here.
So you're parting thoughts, sir.
Yes, sir. I think, I think we all learned a little something today. For one thing, dough is very essential in the making of a good pizza pie. Secondly, never turn your back on a ginger. Good day.
I cannot argue with Jimmy James on either count. Got to tell you something. I noted this to Mrs. O. I wish she was still on the line because I would get her to confirm this, that I said this at about, 3 o'clock this morning or 4 o'clock this morning. I looked over at her and I said, you know, I'm thinking to myself that I had, you know, I had maybe a couple of lovers, let's say, that had red hair, but honestly, I've encountered many a red-haired person in my day, many a ginger, and I gotta say that most of them definitely had prominent psychopathy as part of their personalities. They were all a little disturbed. And I wondered if this was a genetic trait that comes along with that red hair or not, out loud. So there is Ocelli's racism for this Friday night. And with that, I think we got to go over to number six, don't we, BP?
Yeah, he's next.
Okay.
Well, as a fellow ginger, I represent that statement.
Okay.
No, but I just wanted to thank everybody for having me, Chuck, and BP, and you know, other people at the network that keep this going, and all the people that donate. So go out and donate to the network if you're listening. But also, if you have some extra time that you want to spend with the new prisoners, come check us out over at Rumble or Odyssey tomorrow night at 7. Thanks to Chris Graves for always being there and being an awesome friend. I am totally down with putting Graves in a some sort of sport coat with patches on the elbows when I introduce him as a researcher, but maybe have some Misfits patches on the elbows, just to kind of mix it up. And lastly, Mrs. O, I saw your pizza in the chat. It looks freaking amazing. Chuck, you're a lucky guy.
I gotta tell you, no drop of Italian blood in her as far as I know, and yet she can make Italian food, not just the pizza. I don't know what it is. I've known plenty of Italian girls. I'm related to a bunch of them that don't know how to make Italian food. And yet she knows how. So I don't know where it came from, but, I am, pleasantly blessed with her ability to, make things, even working with the materials we get here in the Deep South. So, yes, appreciate that. And, it was better than it looked, actually, taste wise. Interesting stuff, and I can't even take credit for it. She did it. So there you go. And she insisted that I put the picture of the pizza in the chat room again. It's been in there a couple of times this week, over the past week or so. And that's not the only pizza. She made another one a couple of nights later. So, and I have no problem eating pizza whenever, as long as it's good pizza. But anyways, B-Pete, enough about the pizza, enough out of my mouth. I guess we're on to your final sentiment for this particular Friars Day. Maybe you want to get in one last shout out to the Murdochs, or to Bubba with the chicken in his mouth, or perhaps you want to tell me again that I should appreciate the pizza and love the pizza I'm with and all of that. Cause, after all, pie in the sky doesn't necessarily have to be Sicilian, and all. But anyway. What's your thoughts, BP?
Anyway, I'm gonna keep it short. I'm just gonna say, everybody go to Ocelli.com, hit the donate button, do what you can, every little bit helps. It costs to put this thing on, and the costs keep going up. So do what you can, it would be a great help, but it's worth a donation to a program that can attack the in-depth stories that we covered tonight. And have affirmed beyond a reasonable doubt that yes, water does make a difference when it comes to pizza dough, and all redheaded people are crazy. So if that's not of value to you, I'm sure it is to somebody that you know, turn them on to this program. They can pick it up on a podcast later on the website. And with that, we've got another one in the can, and we'll see you next Friday.
Well, absolutely. And I will actually give a complete parting thought this time. I believe there are certain universal truths in the universe. And indeed, not only are gingers at least a bit disturbed, but, well, water is also wet. The quality matters. The sky is blue, and women are all crazy, too. I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. With all the love I got, I wish you a good night.